This is a podcast from Minute Media.
All right, so with the show tonight, knowing how we are, Kevin Goldstein from Fangraphs and Perry, who's a really good friend of the show, Detroit film critic, it's going to go over quite a bit. So I wanted to knock this out. Yeah, knowing us, I did want to knock this out. It's like a 15-minute talk about the Tigers international signings that took place over the weekend as the Tigers went and signed kind of they signed quite a bit of shortstops, actually. But again, they could be anything at this point, Chris.
Yeah, you basically 90% of the players who get signed international deals are shortstops. Victor Martinez was a shortstop. That's always the one that I go back to. Miguel Cabrera was a shortstop. Miguel Sano was a shortstop. This is, you know, that's where they sign guys, and a lot of them don't stick. And then you've got a handful of catchers and a handful of outfielders and then some pitchers. But it's almost always shortstops. If you're like a second baseman already, the odds of you making the majors aren't very good.
That was it. There's one of the Tiger signees was 5'9", something like that. I think it was Gill, Samuel Gill.
Yeah, I don't know if it's pronounced Gill or Heel. You never know until we hear it. You know, we thought Isak Paredes was Isaac Paredes for, I don't know, 4 years before I actually heard it. But yeah, no, he strikes me as kind of a Sergio Alcantara type that might, if he's going to make it, it's going to have to be on the glove. But you know, any of these international signings, we're just going off what other people are writing about them, right? We haven't seen any of these guys. We can find video. You did a great job of digging up some old videos and stuff like that, but it's still, it's almost always in a like batting cage or workout setting. They're not actually playing games against premium competition.
Yeah, because we get that question about what do we think of the draft class. It's, for me, I can't sit there and go, well, based off the fact that Javier Osero out of Venezuela is ranked number 10, means something, because in reality, I haven't seen him play, so I can't really. It's so difficult to, when you do see the video available, mm-hmm. It is what you said, Chris. It's just, it's hard to even gauge anything of how his swing mechanics are going to be, or certain cases with some of these pitchers. For example, I had the Jose Florian, the right-hander out of the Dominican Republic, who signed for $10,000. There was, mm-hmm. He looks like a kid out of a freshman or sophomore in high school, and he's pitching on a bullpen session. So how am I going to gauge anything based off of how he's opening?
And you're not necessarily wrong. I mean, a lot of these kids are 17, 16, some of them are 18. Like it's not, these are basically high schoolers they're signing. And it's just always been something of a crapshoot. I mean, we know there's something to it because certain teams continue to produce decent players from the Latin American market. So there's something to it, but the Tigers haven't really, I mean, you wrote an article, they haven't done a whole lot in last 8 or 9 years, basically since they had that, they had Willy Adames and Avisail Garcia and Eugenio Suarez come out of that program in relatively quick succession, but they were all gone and all did their best work elsewhere, basically. So you can't really give Tigers too much credit for that. I mean, it's something to get minor leaguers out of, or major leaguers out of that. But yeah, they spent a fair amount of money in these last few years and have very little to show for it. And, you know, some of the guys they have spent money on may still develop. We talked about Jose De La Cruz and Adinso Reyes on the show a couple of years ago. We talked about Roberto Campos a lot. We brought up Manuel Sequeira several times because he had a big year. And I'm going to ask Kevin about Christian Santana because he might actually know somebody who's seen him. But
yeah, and he was Evan Pitzerl who wrote an article today about him, kind of him saying, you know, I'm going to be the next big thing. And that's great and all. And maybe paraphrasing how he said it, but that's great to have confidence. But if you can't hit a curveball low and away, what are you going to do? And or anything off speed? Like I always use Pedro Serrano as a major league as a prime example of that. But go ahead, Chris. I'm sorry.
I was just saying, you know, one of the things about being the next big thing is you're also going against 30 other teams full of players with the next big thing on it. Like, I guess 29 other teams. You can't go against 30 other teams. Although in the Dominican, they have more than 30 teams, but whatever. Continue.
That was the thing that I was going to mention about too, because the MLB.com had prospects they were high about, and it was Roberto Campos, and they started his his slugging percentage and the power numbers he did have. But that's an example right there of it's way too early to see. It depends on where he's going to start this year. If he stays the whole year in the rookie league again, you kind of go, okay, well, he's 17. All right. But let's say if he moves up to Lakeland, that's progress. And that's where you kind of have to have the barometer set. And also at the same time, the biggest takeaway, and something we'll talk to Kevin about too, is that he mentioned Rainer Castillo, which is a rare thing to mention among these prospect circles, because the Tigers outside, you look at Bruce Rondon, you had Melvin Mercedes and Gregory Soto, and then points you had, it depends on what you and I talked about this before, and Sandy Baez was one point a highly regarded prospect within the Tigers, not anywhere else. So that to me is, if Rainer Castillo, worth mentioning, that's saying something, comparatively speaking.
Yeah, you know, he pitched pretty well last year. It's rare for them to spend money on pitchers, or spend, like, you know, have one of their bigger signings be a pitcher. So he's definitely somebody who bears watching. But it's just always, it's one of those things. It's not all that different than the draft, or drafting high schoolers, if you will. Like, everybody's excited about Jackson Jobe and his potential. And it's nice. It would be nice if Jackson Jobe went out and dominated in rookie ball. But what you really want is, you want to see these guys go out and perform and struggle and adjust in full season ball. And you know, Roberto Campos, I doubt they'll send him to low A Lakeland. They may, if they think he's ready. And that would be a big sign. I mean, that's always a huge sign. Now, the Tigers thought that Jose De La Cruz could handle full season ball, and he struggled like crazy in low A Lakeland last year. I think he hit like 130 with a 50% strikeout rate, something. He just was not ready, and he was okay in rookie ball again, but that's a sign of, like, hey, and he got out over his skis. But then if you go back 10 years or so, both Willy Adames and Domingo Leyba went straight to full season ball, I believe, after playing in at the rookie level and the international level, you know. So that's a big sign. So if they send Campos, if they send Santana, if they send those guys to full season ball this year, then Tigers fans might be able to get a little excited. But again, they still have to go out and produce. So and if Castillo heads to Lakeland, that'd be sweet.
Yeah, one step closer to getting a minor league jersey with Castillo on the back of it.
Yeah, for sure.
It means something. But there's, when I saw last year De La Cruz last year with Keehan and James Shipman, and there was a couple times where he just struggled against off-speed pitches. And even the Robo strike zone, which, by the way, speaking of which, AAA is going to have that going this year, by the way. Just Mark sent me a note. Yeah, I know, right? So we'll go to the games this year, we're like, ah, crap. It's going to be either they're going to get it, the ball's too high, or it's going to be too low. There's going to be an adjustment. And I don't know. I feel like robot umpires are going to be coming here to the big leagues sooner than we think if AAA goes the way they want to. But De La Cruz made solid contact. He did. The pitches he did get a hold of. But the problem was a lot of the breaking balls he struggled against. And they're like, and he has an arm. Like, I saw him gun down somebody. He's got a really good arm. Defensively, his routes in the outfield are kind of just going to come in time. But there's definitely potential there.
Well, yeah, and that's one of the things. Like, a lot of these guys, as we talked about, they perform in a workout setting. And it's like you said, Pedro Serrano. They haven't even seen legitimate professional breaking balls or changeups, really. And so he could have all the tools in the world and, you know, be a 70 grade power, 70 runner. But if you can't hit a breaking ball and you never develop that ability, then you're not going to be anything. And that's just one of those, you know, that there are things that scouts look for to think that maybe a guy can, but it's really, a lot of it is you're just kind of taking it on faith. And yeah, it sounds like Campos is kind of the same issue right now. Is, you know, he can be fooled by breaking pitches, and maybe some guys pick it up quickly and off they go. But it's really just a wait and see game. And that's, like, you know, it's always, every time we talk about these international signings, it's like, well, let's talk about it in 5 years.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you went and looked back. So what was the class 5 years ago? Was that Carlos Irigoyen and Alvarado, or what was his name? Alvaro Gonzalez. Was that 5 years ago?
That was 5 years ago. Yeah.
And now none of those guys are considered prospects. And Pedro Martinez Jr., I think, was one of the big prospects that year. And none of them are on. None of them are on top prospect list at all.
Did they spend quite a bit of money on him too, like over $1 million on him?
I thought they spent like $900,000 on Pedro Martinez Jr. Okay.
All right.
And he's—I don't think he's ever hit over 200 in rookie level ball.
They spent a total of $30,000 for the pitchers they signed this year. $30,000. That's it.
So the Tigers
signed,
did.
Yeah. So they signed.
Oh, I didn't see. Yes.
Yeah. So they had Edward Montero, Monero for $10,000 out of Venezuela, another Venezuelan lefty this time, in.
Jorge Petri.
Jorge Petri, $10,000. Gabriel Torres, also out of Venezuela, at $10,000. And so.
And what was Florian?
Oh, $10,000. Sorry, $40,000.
So they spent $10,000 on each one of these. But, well, we talked about it. We talked about what the Astros did. The Astros spent like $30,000 total or less than $100,000 total for three pitchers that started in the playoffs for them. So it's not always about how much money you spend down there, but.
And you mentioned this in the Discord channel earlier, and you're absolutely right. There was it's just the way that the development and, you know, those guys, it really, really goes a long way because you were talking about what the Houston did with some of the older veteran international signings they had. And then you see what the Dodgers have done. And there is definitely for the Tigers right now, there's a lot of new people in place. And so one of the things I was trying to figure out, and I think I worded it incorrectly when I emailed Tigers PR, because I know sometimes one certain person doesn't have any patience with me, but I was essentially trying to see how much of a turnover since 2019, the training staff and all that has had, because I think there's been more, to me, there's more significant changes in the international side of things than there has been in probably 15, 20 years, because there's a lot of people. It's just a series of new faces and how they're approaching development. They have, you know, the coach now, or the Latin player coach who's going to help them out, which I think is going to make a difference, but a difference in how they play, we'll see. But it looks like here, the signings have that kind of feel of kind of the older class. And there was one situation, Chris, that you found, Hinson Sanchez, who looked like he was ready to go last year, which ironically enough is, with the Athletic, there's an article in the Athletic we'll talk about later that ties into that.
Yeah, and we're also going to talk a little bit on international draft. And it's an open secret within baseball that teams are coming to agreements with these kids 2, sometimes 3 years before they're actually eligible to sign. They can't sign until they're 16 years old. But teams, and I'm sure there's, you know, money, backdoor deals, money given and things like that. And it's just, yeah, it's a terrible system down there. But baseball, you know, teams exploit poverty, and then they exploit, you've got Buscones. Some of them are really legit good teachers, good coaches, things like that. They care about the players, and other ones are just kind of exploiting the players to make money. That's basically what it is. They're trying to get the players. They don't actually teach them how to play baseball. They just want them to look good in showcase settings so they can get big bonuses, and then they get to take, I don't know, 30%, 40% of the bonus. Yeah, it's just a nasty system, and feels like there should be a better way, and maybe there will be, maybe not. I don't know.
And I you know, there was a question that we're going to save for later, but one from a good friend of the show, Deadly Ninja Bees, was asking some great questions since the pod, probably since the fall. And one of the questions he asked was, do you see any way that an international draft could work? Signing kids at 16 from poor countries seems creepy to me. And there's an element. And what he said, he's, I mean, here's, you know, you're talking, we're talking more to this, Phil, who is a Cuban baseball writer who's going down to Cuba to cover the national series going on right now. We're going to have him on the podcast, hopefully in the next month or so.
Cool.
And I think, like, in terms of even how, it's no different with how Cubans, I mean, if you're an athlete at a young age in Cuba, you go through their system. Like back in the day, I remember my father told me this, and I remember it was validated. You go to a special school, and you box or whatever the country needs, or wherever you're good at, that's what you focus on. Cubans are also really good at judo. Apparently, they've been really good in terms of
judo chop,
and on the international scene for the Olympics. But volleyball too, same thing. They've been really good at that. So.
No,
it's no different from that. honestly, in some cases.
Well, yeah, and I, you know, if we ask this and Goldstein comments on it, I bet what he'll say is something along the lines of it's way creepier than you can imagine right now. It, like we talked about, they're talking to 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds, any sport where you're getting kids who are teenagers or preteens, is always going to have some really weird, strange, gross stuff happening. Look at gymnastics.
Oh yeah.
Or, you know, like soccer in England and others, you know, they're getting these kids in these, you know, they're basically in Manchester United feeder schools starting at like age 7 or 8. And we've seen some of that here in the United States with like IMG Academy and things like that with baseball and basketball and football. And you remember the stupid fake high school football team we saw this year, like,
yeah,
for whatever reason, young sports, if the more serious you take sports at the younger age, the more weird stuff is going to come out, and it sucks, but that's the way of the world.
Yeah, Barcelona does the same thing. Mm-hmm. In La Liga, they do it. Real Madrid, it's the same thing. But what's, I think, happened here in the United States, at least in my opinion, it's a lot more covert. It's disguised as education. In reality, we know it's, I mean, look at the, before we get out of here, I mean, look at the free agent, or quote unquote, the transfer portal right now. It's a free, it's just basically glorified free agents. You can't tell me otherwise. And I think with baseball, what's happening, and we've talked about this before, when you and I both played baseball back in the day, it was, you know, there's a couple of travel teams, and travel teams were like, you represented the best of the city in your league. Now you have kids playing all year round. My niece is 9, and she, they were trying to get her to play. She'd been playing since last year in February, and they wanted to play her winter ball again. And she's good. She's really good. She's a good pitcher. And she bats lefty. She's a switch hitter, so that's really good for her age. But my brother's like, man, I can't drive all over Kingdom Come. I mean, they had a tournament up in Midland.
Yeah, I think I told you, Harrison's got one of his good friends. He's 7. He's playing baseball. They're not in season right now, but he has practices twice a week. He's the one who went and had like a 3-hour practice with Jarrell Cotton. And it's like, it's not like his parents are pushing him too hard. This is like the way of the world now. And like, you know, we're really good friends with Brian Sikowski at Perfect Game. And, you know, he does awesome work, and Perfect Game does a ton of good stuff. So do the guys at Prep Baseball Report. But it always feels a little bit weird when they've got like, here are the top 109-year-olds in the country, like things like that. But if they didn't do it, somebody else would. There's a market for it for some reason, and parents want to push their kids, and some kids really want to do this. And I don't, maybe because it's all they know, but yeah, it's strange, and it excludes a lot of people, because like you said, it gets awfully expensive to be paying for jerseys and equipment, and then traveling. You know, some of these kids, the summer showcase circuit is absurd. You know, they travel to Florida, they travel to California multiple times. They might be down in Texas, they might be in Chicago. It's you got to have a lot of money and a lot of resources to get yourself seen enough to possibly be a first round pick these days.
Yeah, and that's why you see kids at a young age having surgery as soon as like 15, 16 years old. There was when I was looking up, for example, when I was doing the write up on Garrett Hill, he had surgery
senior high school.
Yeah, senior year of high school.
Yeah.
Also, I did not know he had a twin brother. By the way, he was a left.
Yeah, hand. You were the one who told me that.
Yeah. So it's fun to go those to do those deep digs on some of the pitchers, and there should be some more coming out. Hopefully, get some people writing here sooner or later, because I feel like a dad these days sometimes with some of our staff members. But at any rate. All right, So you want, of course, you will listen to the supplemental, and we're going to be gone with Kevin Goldstein here in just a few minutes. Old friend of the show, Perry, is going to talk 2021 movies. I just watched As Good As It Gets for the first time ever recently.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, that was an interesting movie, but we'll talk about that a little later.
That's interesting. I remember seeing that that came out like 97, 98, right? Yeah. So it would be interesting to go back and look at it now and see how it holds up.
Yeah, no, Helen Hunt, by the way, underrated. She really, really,
she was everywhere for a while in the 90s, and then she just kind of disappeared. The last movie I saw her in was in, I forgot the name of it, but it was about a writer who was in an iron lung.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was a pretty interesting movie, but yeah, all right.
All right, we'll be, so tune in for the episode after that, stay tuned.
Yeah. See ya. Yeah, Perry said he's backstage.
Oh, is he? Okay. All right. I will get that